Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Big stories, big guests, the big picture. Afternoons with Rob Breckenridge. Weekdays 12:30 to 3, 770 CHQR.
When it comes to violence, I mean, there's a real spectrum, obviously. There's, the hockey fight versus the serial killer. But certainly, you know, you can look throughout human history and we see violence, and we see violence primarily, not exclusively, but primarily from men. I mean, are men hardwired to some extent to be violent or to resort to violence? Is there something about the psychology of the human male that lends itself to that? Or in society, do we glorify violence? Do we associate violence with masculinity? These are some of the issues explored in a fascinating new book, which is called Mad Blood Stirring, The Inner Lives of Violent Men. And joining us in studio to talk about his book is the author Damon Fairless. Joins us. Damon, great to have you with us here. Welcome to the program.
Appreciate it.
You know, I mean, it's a fascinating book at a scientific level about why men are the way they are and the exploration of violence and a whole lot of other issues. But it's also kind of a personal journey for you. Talk about kind of that path to writing this book and what it meant to you.
Yeah, it's super personal. And, you know, I didn't set out to do that. I started writing a book. You know, I had been in this fight on the subway. I start with that in the book. I headbutted a guy. I've done a few things like this.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was thinking these are little anecdotes I'll pepper the story with. But, you know, I was really interested in the science, looking at the deep roots of these kind of aggressive behaviors. But then at some point, you know, when you're writing a book with any, I think any big project, you have to ask yourself, like, well, why am I interested in this? And the topic kind of turned around and bit me in the tail. And I realized, hey, you know, I think I'm trying to figure myself out, because I think what I wasn't really aware of is how strong these emotions are. Like, when I've been in these fights, like that subway incident where I was headbutting the guy, like, I change. I go from being the guy who's in front of you now, this rational, nice, calm, civilized, lovely human being, I like to think, to being someone who wants to smash a guy. And that's a big change. And I think we need to, I needed to understand that about myself.
Do you think a lot of men are that way?
Yeah, I mean, I have no way of putting, like, a figure on it. But, yeah, I think a lot of guys are that way. And I think, I mean, the more, like, I know they are. But I think it's a continuum. I think that there are people who just never have these feelings, or almost never have these feelings, or they have faint feelings. I think there are guys who are on the other extreme who are, you know, crazy sociopaths.
Right.
But I would say, by and large, I think that most men, and I think a lot of women, too, can understand these feelings. I mean, this is what road rage is about. This is what domestic violence is about. This is what fights are about. We see these are the most, like, the worst manifestations of these emotions, but the emotions underlying that is like that big part of the iceberg you never see. They're there, I think. I could be wrong, but I think they're there. I think they're a big part of our inner lives, and I think that we don't really talk much about them.
Well, we seem to be, at least if we want to go by statistics, becoming less violent as a society. But it hasn't gone away either, obviously. Yeah. I mean, there are some things that maybe are a lot deeper than the trends from generation to generation.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's super interesting, because I think we have, you know, if you put aside major, you know, military strikes, you know, wars are probably more deadly in some ways than they ever were, just because of the technology and stuff. But in terms of, like, getting in a street fight, getting killed on the street on a altercation with another guy, that's gone way down. And there's a really interesting book by Steven Pinker that kind of talks about how we think the world is more dangerous than ever, but it's actually probably more safer day to day for most civilian people.
Yeah.
And I tend to think that has a lot to do with, you know, we create a strong economy, we have an infrastructure in our society, we have, you know, rules of engagement and civilization, and those things do a lot to mitigate these emotions, right? Like, you might sit in your car and think, oh, I'd like to smash that guy in the face for cutting me off. But you don't, for a whole bunch of reasons. You know, one of them, maybe he'll be put in jail. And you know that, right?
Yeah.
but also, you know, when, you know, you and I, we didn't wake up starving this morning and say, I'm gonna steal food or kill someone to get fed, right? I mean, that's what civilization is, mm-hmm. really, right, when it comes down to it. And I think that those civilizing factors do a lot to mitigate these emotions. But if we're not aware of those emotions, they can sneak up on you, you know.
Right. And you talk about continuum, and there's kind of a continuum of these stories in the book. And I mean, it starts with your own of getting in a fight on a subway and the circumstance that led to that. You talk about people who fight for a living, who fight because they like it, who plan to fight at a certain time. And then it goes on from there, obviously, people who do heinous things, incredibly violent acts, rape or murder. But if you go back to that other end of it, where, you know, people who are willing to fight or people who seek out to fight, do we still glorify the words? I mean, that seems to be the sign of the alpha male. A macho guy is one who's capable of fighting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it still is. And I mean, I think there's a lot of really interesting reasons for that. I don't pretend to know them all, but I guess part of the reason I was interested in talking about fighters, like professional fighters, friends of mine who fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of dabbled in that world enough to know it intimately, but not at the level that they've done. And so, you know, I think that one of the really interesting things I found is, like, in MMA gyms, mixed martial arts gyms, you know, the kind of fighting you see on UFC, a lot of those gyms are populated by guys like us, middle class, well-educated, often white dudes, guys who traditionally haven't needed to fight. You know, in not long ago, fight gyms, boxing gyms, were dominated by, you know, people who were, you know, a lot of black people, a lot of people who had no economic, you know, status or privilege.
Right. Yeah.
And fighting was a way out of this institutionalized, racist, you know, environment they were in, right? They fought to come out of that. Guys are going into fighting for different reasons these days. And I think part of it is that a lot of these guys are looking for, you know, and misguided or not, looking to own that sense of manhood that fighting brings to guys. I'm not saying that that's a right thing, but I can definitely say that that's the motivation for a lot of the guys going into fighting. So it is kind of like, I don't know, the signifier, the gold standard of a lot of guys' sense of being a man.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I think there are those who have argued that there's almost a crisis of masculinity, that what does it mean to be a man as we become more civilized and tame some of these other instincts? How do you establish masculinity, and what does that mean in the 21st century?
Yeah, I mean, you're asking a question I wish I had an answer to. I guess, you know, I've never had a huge struggle with that. I feel pretty confident in my manhood, but I will say that, I mean, I think where I had trouble is understanding that one of the satisfactions that I get out of being a man is throwing my weight around, being physically dominant. Now, I was doing a lot of justifying of that by saying, well, you know, I'm intervening, I'm getting in fights with guys who are bullies and need to be taken down a notch. And there's some element of truth to that. I've never gone out and picked a fight just to fight. I've always gotten in a fight because there was a guy who was bullying someone.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an element of truth to that. But the fact is what I was doing is looking for a reasonable excuse to get into a fight, because I also found some satisfaction in indulging those emotions. So, you know, I mean, to some extent, I kind of came through that and realized, oh, you know, I guess I was doing that to kind of make myself, I wasn't actively saying, like, I need to feel like a man, I'm going to do this. I genuinely think that the draw to that impulse is a fairly inherent part for a lot of manhood for a lot of guys. For me, being a man now, after writing this book, after realizing that about myself, has a lot more to do with a kind of sense of mature ownership of those emotions. I'm not denying my desire to dominate or to get into fights, but what I'm saying is that I need to recognize that that can be an incredibly self-indulgent thing to do. That if I really want to protect society, as I thought I was doing by intervening with guys, what I need to do is also be aware that I can be a destructive force. Like, when I got on that fight in the subway, it became a brawl. Someone could have had a knife. They could have had a gun.
Sure.
And I was essentially being boyish in my desire to be physically dominant. So now I don't, on a subway, I carry money on me, and if there's a guy acting weird, I'll say, "Hey, man, here's a 20. Let's get off the yeah. subway. Let's get a drink. I can diffuse the situation. I can be mature. I can still be, a man. I can still be a presence. I can still, have that authority. But it's constructive as opposed to self-indulgent and destructive."
And part of this exploration, and I mean, you have your own family situation to talk about in the book. So there's your own upbringing, there's your own genetics, there's Western culture, there's Western media. There are all these things that may be culprits in how you act or how you feel or how anybody acts or feels, that perhaps we're pre-wired, we're hardwired to be this way anyway. So what do we attribute it to?
You mean specifically what, the urge to fight?
Or? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess, what I'd argue, as I argue in the book, is that I don't think you can attribute it to any one thing. I think it's such a, most human behavior is so complex that there's not a single cause for it. What I'm arguing is that if you, as I think we have traditionally done over the last, say, half century, say, it's all about socialization. Well, I mean, I agree with that, a lot. Mm-hmm. Socialization is hugely important. And, you do get things like, frat houses, who basically are pro-rape. You do get, racist groups who want to burn crosses. You do get these things from social mores, right? But then you also get people like me who were raised in a house by very pacifistic, non-aggressive people. At some point wanted to bash a guy's head in with his forehead. So I feel like we're doing ourselves a disservice if we're not also looking at the inherent emotions that drive aggression, because those things can, I talk about in the book, you can get groups of guys coalescing around a sports team that suddenly turn violent in sports riots that can, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a sports fan. There's nothing wrong with, going for your team. I'm just saying that when you're not aware of the deep lying inherent tendencies that we have as an animal, then it's hard to kind of control them when they come out from time to time under specific conditions. So I tend to think, to answer your question in a really long-winded way, you got to understand the inherent parts of our emotional life, and you got to understand the environmental conditions under which they flare up, right?
So what do you hope people take from this book?
I wish I could say I was trying to write a prescription for violence. I was writing a book more or less to figure out myself. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's some takeaway in that every guy I talk to, I mean, like, the pro-MMA fighters, the serial rapists, the serial killer even, they were extremely willing, and I think they had a need to talk about what made them tick. And I don't think that we tend to... When we ask guys to be more in charge of their emotions, we ask them to be more aware of their kinder, gentler side. That's awesome. But if we really want men to take charge of their more destructive side, that potential that's there, I think it's also important to look and talk about these, these inner life, these fantasies that we have when we're in our car and someone pisses us off, right?
Yeah.
And so I guess what I'm hoping is that this book helps make it a little more straightforward for guys to be like, yeah, that's part of my inner life. I have that. I can identify with that. I can talk about that. If you talk about something, you can understand it.
Because we can aspire to be a less violent society, but not necessarily have to sacrifice masculinity in the process.
Yeah, I don't think, I write in this book about a friend of mine, Jeff Francis, who died in Afghanistan as a soldier there. Mm-hmm. He left academia. He joined the military. And he died in Afghanistan from a roadside bomb. He, in a lot of ways, is a hero. I mean, not just because he served in our military, but personally to me, he's a hero. He's someone I aspire to be more like.
Yeah.
Because he was someone who, he was a Buddhist. He meditated, he believed in peacefulness, but he also believed in protecting, truly protecting other people and putting himself in the line of fire, so to speak, I guess literally, to protect people. And he was not a guy who would go out there and do the stupid stuff I was doing, getting in the kind of stupid fights I was doing to indulge myself. He was the quiet, professional guy who, I mean, he was a real man.
Yeah.
He was not a boy, as I have been. He was a man. He said, this is my duty to protect these women and children and men who the Taliban is and Al Qaeda is, is repressing and killing and hunting down. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put myself in the line. So I don't think that you have to sacrifice masculinity to be nonviolent. You know, he, there's a lot of good protecting and nurturing and standing up for good. And it takes a lot of bravery and a lot of self-confidence, a lot of leadership to do that. It takes an especial amount to do it without defaulting to the animal part of ourselves that wants to be violent.
Yeah. Well, it's quite fascinating. The book is called Mad Blood Stirring, The Inner Lives of Violent Men. Damon, thanks so much for joining us here today. Really appreciate this.
Thank you for having me.
Afternoons with Rob Breckenridge, starting at 12:30 on News Talk 770 Calgary.